Hi, I'm Suni Khalid, an editor in the KALW newsroom. At KALW, we make radio by the Bay, for the Bay, and just a few times a year, we ask you for your support. We share news that tells the stories of the communities that make the Bay Area such a unique place. You can contribute online at KALW.org. Click donate, and thank you.
KALW.
It's connected to the computer and also has an AI accelerator. And what that was doing is that was detecting whether or not trains were present.
Today, we meet researchers using a special night vision camera to track the movement of trains and pollution.
We have coal trains passing through economically disadvantaged cities and populations throughout the United States and actually throughout the world.
How open-air coal trains are impacting Oakland communities. Then it's been almost 40 years since San Francisco's Folsom Street Fair first started.
And it had this just mass of bars and sex clubs, and you could just sort of stumble through this whole thing for a whole weekend.
A story from Hey Area, where we find answers to the questions you ask. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. The city of Oakland is back in court over the fate of the old Oakland Army base. The case revolves around the lease that local businessman Phil Tagami was granted to develop the land there. The city council found out that Tagami had plans to build the West Coast's largest coal export terminal at the base. In response, they passed an ordinance banning the bulk storage and handling of coal within city limits. That was in 2016, and Tagami sued. But the judge in that case said Oakland hadn't presented enough evidence to prove that coal dust from passing trains could harm local residents. Now, they're going to court again after a team of scientists set out to find the evidence Oakland was missing. KALW environment reporter Joshua Sorodiak brings us that story.
Ooh, what do we have here?
So we're at Golden Gate Meat Company, and they very kindly hosted one of our monitoring equipment.
A butcher's shop isn't the first place I'd think to meet an air quality researcher. But strange as it may seem, right here, outside Golden Gate Meats in Richmond, is a perfect location for Dr. Nick Spada. He's a scientist with UC Davis's Air Quality Research Center at the Crocker Nuclear Lab. I'm here to check out some of his gear.
Here's what it looks like.
Spada pops open the back of his Prius hatchback. Inside, there's a heavy-duty, watertight plastic case that takes up about half the trunk.
So we have a Pelican case that's filled with electronics. We have a computer here that handles all the data processing, collecting all the information. It has a personal weather station attached to it, a particle sensor that gives us the measure of air quality.
Attached to the inside lid of the case, there's a device that looks like a small Wi-Fi router with four heavy-duty antennas bolted to its corners sticking out at angles. There's a cooling fan and a bunch of little electronic modules with maybe a dozen USB ports between them. And there's a web of cables connecting everything together. But the crown jewel of Spada's setup is a night vision camera about the size of the one on your smartphone. It sits inside a cylindrical security camera shell, and it kind of has a mind of its own.
And it's connected to the computer and also has an AI accelerator. And what that was doing is that was detecting whether or not trains were present.
That AI mind is really good at one thing, recognizing when it sees a train. But it's not looking for just any trains. It's specifically looking for trains carrying coal, like the ones that pass Golden Gate Meats regularly. The coal is mined in Utah and brought here in open-top cars a mile long to be loaded on ships and sold overseas. There's been debate over whether or not these coal trains pollute the communities they travel through, and answering that question has been tough, because it's hard to catch the trains passing by. They often come through in the middle of the night, not exactly the best time to have a scientist sitting by the tracks taking measurements. Now, this camera and the AI mind powering it is attempting to put that debate to rest, but recognizing coal trains is a skill the AI camera had to learn.
We trained it with about 1 million pictures that we did have to classify. We sort of created a little computer game that I tested with my kids using a PlayStation controller.
Together, Spada and his kids went through picture after picture of different types of trains, breaking them down into categories for the AI. Once the humans told the computer the difference between passenger and freight trains enough times, the computer could start making those decisions for itself.
So once it was able to do that, we started recording every single train event with 1 second before and after so that we could very clearly say, okay, this is the very beginning of the train, this is the very end of the train, we would have the timestamps for that.
With the particle sensor measuring the air quality every second, Spada was able to compare the air quality while different types of trains were passing to the average air quality for the area. Then he could tell if coal trains were leaving more pollution than passenger trains or other freight trains. He was attempting to answer a question that had implications for Oakland, a few miles away. It was a question that had come up in court.
Studying coal trains coming through is a difficult process because you don't really know when they're happening.
Dr. Bart Ostro is Dr. Spada's colleague at UC Davis. At this point, Ostro's semi-retired, but he's a big name in environmental regulation. He spent decades working with the EPA, setting environmental standards for California and the nation. That's one of the reasons he was asked to address Oakland City Council way back in 2015. The city and environmentalists were concerned. They had just found out that a local developer wanted to build the largest coal export terminal on the West Coast at the old Oakland Army Base. If that happened, the amount of coal moving through Oakland by train each year would dwarf the amount that was already moving through Richmond. Oakland was worried about the health and environmental effects the coal terminal would bring, so they passed an ordinance banning the bulk storage and handling of coal within city limits. But the developer took the city to court over its ban.
The city of Oakland lost the court case because the judge had decided that there was not any proof that the trains passing by would cause health effects.
Part of the reason the judge wasn't seeing that proof was that, for the most part, the exact type he was looking for didn't exist yet. That's because so far, most studies of the health effects of coal dust have focused on conditions inside mines, not cities.
It's very interesting that there have basically been no studies in urban areas that have looked at this carefully and have collected enough data to feel comfortable reporting it.
A few months after Oakland lost their case, Ostro had an idea. The coal already being shipped through Richmond was the same type of Utah coal that would be heading to Oakland if a terminal was built there. And it was getting to Richmond the same way coal would come to Oakland, in those mile-long trains with open-top cars. Why not study the trains in Richmond? And in the meantime, he could find out what effects the coal trains had on people there.
We have coal trains passing through economically disadvantaged cities and populations throughout the United States and actually throughout the world. So there's also global implications, I think, of doing this work. And that was, both of those things were my motivation.
Yes, I think it's fair to say that exposure to coal dust is harmful to human health.
When Ostro got the idea for his study, the first person he pulled onto the team was a public health consultant named Dr. Heather Kuiper. Kuiper says the pollution the coal trains leave behind is especially bad for the young and elderly. It also has an outsized impact on folks who don't have good access to medical care and on people who have underlying health conditions.
So if you already are experiencing higher rates of asthma or cardiovascular disease in a community, those communities will be even more impacted by particulate matter. And that's where we get into an issue of justice.
West Oakland, where the coal terminal was slated to be built, is an area where redlining has historically concentrated the city's black and low-income residents. It's a part of the town that already has an increased pollution burden, from the freeways that surround it, the ships idling at the port, and all the semi-traffic bringing products to and from those ships. Kuiper says that if a coal terminal is built there, West Oakland residents will be at increased risk for a whole range of negative health effects. But it's not just the breathing-related problems you might expect.
So we see particulate matter in its different forms being associated with cardiovascular disease, respiratory diseases, cancers, low birth weight, premature birth, and cognitive impacts such as Alzheimer's disease and other effects such as potentially autism for children as well. But wait, there's more.
Kuiper says that the tiny particles found in coal dust can actually alter your DNA in ways that you can pass on to your kids.
So you can obviously tell that it's a train going by. You can see the background, the landscape, the animals that would come check out the camera. And on dry days, you would see some dust getting kicked up from the train.
Back in Richmond, Dr. Spada tells me that after months of observation, his monitors found coal trains add more pollution to the air than any other type of train. Even after they had dropped off their load, the empty cars traveling back to the mine added more air pollution than either passenger trains or freight trains carrying other types of cargo.
So that's not counting all of the other particles in the air that are naturally in the air, and then also things like cars and, you know, these other pollutants that all urban environments have.
The data the team of Ostro, Spada, and Kuiper collected was published in a report earlier this year. It amounts to the most extensive study to date of the effects that coal trains have on the urban communities they pass through. Their study was made possible by the use of artificial intelligence, but with all the fear over AI in the news these days, Spada wants people to understand that, at least sometimes, it's a tool that can be put to good use.
It was much better for my undergraduate students to be focusing on the data analysis and learning to do field work rather than spending all of their time on grunt work.
The city of Oakland is currently in court over the fate of the old Oakland Army base. If the city wins, it's unlikely that a coal terminal will ever be built there. But if the city loses, the evidence Spada and the team has collected in Richmond can be used in the next round of litigation to show that coal cars pollute the communities they travel through. In the meantime, their research can serve as a model to researchers around the world working on the issue. In the East Bay, I'm Joshua Sorodiak for Cross Currents.
Thanks, Joshua. Closing arguments in Oakland's coal terminal trial are set for October 11th. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. This Sunday is the fourth annual Folsom Street Fair in San Francisco. The fair aims to provide a safe, open, and inclusive environment for the kink, leather, and alternative sexuality communities. But did you ever wonder how it got its start? Well, one listener did. They asked us how that particular street in San Francisco's Soma District became the center of sexy times. So for our project, Hey Area, where we find answers to the questions you ask, reporter Lance Gardner went to find out.
I'm here in Ringgold Alley with community historian Paul Gabriel. This little strip between 8th and 9th Streets is part of San Francisco's newly designated Gay and Leather Cultural District.
This is a famous place for people to come after hours and have sex outdoors.
That history is one of the reasons why every year there's a street fair around the corner on Folsom. It draws as many as 250,000 consenting adults.
And there's this leather daddy, you know, and he's got the glasses and the leather cap, and he's got his boy, and his boy is in a full plastic bodysuit that he can barely walk, held by a chain leash at the neck.
As it turns out, the origin story of the Folsom Street Fair has as much to do with affordable housing as it does with sex. Back in the 60s, people facing housing discrimination started coming to this area. Gay men, racial minorities, elderly people. During the day, it was a blue-collar industrial neighborhood. But at night...
And it had this just mass of bars and sex clubs and dance clubs, and you could just sort of stumble through this whole thing for a whole weekend if you wanted and never get disgorged until Monday morning.
By the 80s, plans for redevelopment threatened to displace the boots and roots of Soma residents. So in 1984, activists organized an event to raise money and keep the city from building a freeway through their community.
They had like kids doing art. They had the whole community there at the fair, including the leather community.
And by the early 90s, there were fewer watercolors and more assless chaps. The leather community took the opportunity to draw people from around the country by adopting the fare as their own. Today in Ringgold Alley, you won't find the kind of late-night cruising that put it on the map. Plaques and monuments commemorating the leather community share the alley with a tech startup in a gated apartment complex. But up on Folsom every year, there's a fair that continues to raise funds and eyebrows. And that is what put Folsom Street at the center of sexy times. In Ringgold Alley, I'm Lance Gardner for Hey Area.
Lance Gardner produced that story in 2019 for our project Hey Area, where our reporters find answers for the questions you ask. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. We're in the middle of the controversially named Hispanic Heritage Month. Some communities are referring to it as Latinx or Latine Heritage Month. Regardless of what you call it, today we're celebrating this rich community and culture by highlighting the work of some Bay Area poets. First, we hear from Maria Guerrero, a proud daughter of immigrant parents and of her Mexican heritage. She's a teacher by day and a poet at 3 a.m. when the kids won't let her sleep. Born and raised in Bayview, Hunters Point, she centers her work around family, community, and healing. She reads her poem, Chile de Arbol.
Science says capsaicin, a chemical release to deter mammal predators from destroying the seeds, is what makes a chile spicy. I say it's despecho. Solo piénsalo. How pissed must the chile have been to spend generation upon generation adapting, evolving, overcoming against predators hasta que un día un ancestro took a bite and said, qué rico. I'm convinced spite is what makes the chile spicy. Si tus hermanos dicen tú no eres mexicana porque no comes chile, here is a receta para salsa de chile de árbol. Disclaimer, don't ask me for measurements. Todo es al tanteo. Eyeball that shit. Ingredientes, tomatillos, chile de árbol, ajo, agua, sal, despecho, nota, no confundir con amor.
That was Bayview Hunters Point poet Maria Guerrero. Next, we hear a love story turned on its head from queer Guatemalan poet Hilary Cruz Mejia. They read their poem, Hablemos del Amor.
Mi corazón es una telaraña de consejos, acurrucado en el despliegue digestivo de una abejita, floating in the resurrection of a political statement of a lover with needs. Our love is our needs. Our approach to our needs is our love. Love sounds like a riddle, con un calco semántico que adopta una muerte sin hechos crónicos, because love ain't steady. I mean, romantic love is a complex, exploited configuration of socio-political fragments of our aesthetics. I am not saying that I hate el romance, but how many times do you fall with the expectation of unconditional romantic love recostada in the open arms of a love with conditions, erasing las chispas que aruñan el desespero por amor? This question is as open as the wounds all around my belly, as broken como un vasito caído del techo. I mean, love is like the sound of her voice entangled with the wind.
Y mi mirada no hay secretos, que ames mis defectos. Me gusta.
That was Hilary Cruz Mejia reading her poem Hables del Amor. You can find more local poets at klw.org/baypoets. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.